Welcome, everyone, to the Nomad on Fire podcast, the show all about the digital nomad lifestyle coupled with financial independence. We'll also be exploring tips and tricks on other lifestyle optimization strategies. I'm your host, Eric. Thanks for being here. Let's jump right in. All right, Shash Singh, welcome to the Nomad on Fire podcast.
Thank you for having me on here. I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, this should be a fun conversation for the audience today. You are a YouTube ads expert, so definitely want to pick your brain on that. And you've been a digital nomad for the last 4 years, so should get some great takeaways for the listener on that subject as well. So should be a lot of fun. But yeah, with that, if you don't mind, can you kind of start us off with just what your background and what your story is?
Absolutely. So I'm from Toronto in Canada. And basically how I started with this whole digital nomad thing was I always hated winters, right? So I always was really not a big fan of the cold weather. And I kind of knew that if I got a 9-to-5 in Canada, I'd just die inside, right? And also I would freeze. So I basically figured out I had to do something online. And there was one buddy of mine who was kind of traveling around, making money online, and basically he was doing SEO, right? So I started helping him out. I was basically helping him sell private blog network posts on Black Hat World. I don't know if you know what, but it's basically like old school SEO stuff, kind of sketchy. And he was giving me basically a commission for each one I sold. So I was just managing the whole thing and helping him out with that. So I got into the whole online world with that, started doing SEO, and built an SEO agency that was not very successful. I kind of was able to travel for a bit, but then I had to come back to Toronto because I was running out of funds. I had to save up money again. So I had like a couple years of that where I was kind of like half traveling, going to Colombia for a bit, going to a couple other countries, and then going back to Canada. And I was like, okay, I'm like bleeding money. I just got to, you know, work and save a bit more. So eventually what happened is I stumbled into YouTube ads when one of my friends, he runs a fitness company, and he was like, "Hey, Shash, do you want to run YouTube ads for my company?" And his company is called Kino Body. So he basically is a fitness influencer, and I ran ads for him, and those ads started doing very well on YouTube. So those YouTube ads, within 2 weeks, we were at $2,000 to $5,000 a day in ad spend, and like $10,000 to $15,000 a day in revenue. And I was lucky because I started like mid-December, and then the whole New Year's thing started. So we basically took full advantage of that. And that was when I learned that, okay, paid ads is something I really like doing. SEO is something I didn't like at all. The feedback loop is super long with search engine optimization because you make a change, it'll take months. Paid ads, you make a change, the next day you know whether it's working or not, right? So because of that, I saw this as, hey, this is a skill set that I should focus in on. And I took that one kind of success story and I've worked with other clients, figured out, okay, how to get better at this, learned a bit more about digital marketing in general. And eventually I started my agency, Lynx Digital. And that's kind of what's allowed me to travel the world. And that's basically a brief intro to me and my story.
Awesome. Very cool, man. Yeah, let's start with the YouTube ads side of it, and then we can maybe dig into the travel stuff in a little bit here. Sweet. Mm-hmm. So YouTube ads, like why, just kind of a general maybe background for people, like why would that be a good, if someone's wanting to become a digital nomad, like why would that be a good like high value skill that they should look into like learning that skill set?
Yeah. So if you're able to run YouTube ads profitably for your clients, there are a couple of benefits, right? Number one, there are a lot less people who know how to do YouTube ads than Facebook ads. So a lot more YouTube advertisers, a lot more Facebook advertisers. And that means that you just have less competition for getting clients. And number two, it's basically a skill set that makes your clients money, right? Whenever you have a skill set that directly generates revenue for people, that's something that basically allows you to really charge top dollar, right? And so even if you start out and you're just doing YouTube ads for clients and you're charging them some sort of monthly fee, that's still, you know, that's a very powerful way to get started because you don't really need to put in a bunch of money into buying inventory on Amazon or, you know, basically testing a bunch of ads for drop shipping. It's a pretty simple model. You just have to learn the skill set and be able to basically apply it to your clients' businesses. And then long term, the upside is much higher because once you know how to do paid ads and you can kind of figure out this whole marketing thing, you can start running your own offers, your own products, and your own courses, etc. So it's just a great skill set to get into. And in general, I would say if you take like basically paid ads in general, so YouTube ads, Facebook ads, Google ads, and pair that with a good understanding of copywriting, you are very well set to basically be able to achieve a lot of goals, right? You can achieve a lot of financial freedom and also time and location freedom with those skill sets.
Yeah, and you have a course, correct? If someone's wanting to learn that skill set?
Absolutely. We have a YouTube advertising course, and yep, I can throw a link into that into the show notes.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah, I'll link that up in the show notes for anyone wanting to check that out. So say someone is interested in this, right? They take your course, they learn the skill set. What's any recommendations for someone like kind of first starting out in this area in terms of finding clients? Like what would you recommend for someone looking to do that?
So Upwork.com is a pretty dependable place to start. It's kind of like all of my friends and I, we all started there. It's really one of the best places to kind of start building an agency or start taking on clients. It's literally, so actually one of my buddies, Tommy Joyner, I don't know if you've heard of him. He basically is an OG digital nomad, and he's kind of taught my friend Ryan how to do Upwork. And then Ryan taught me, and then, you know, we taught a bunch of other people. So yeah, Upwork is like the place to start for sure. Other than that, Facebook groups, for example, there are a lot of Facebook groups dedicated to marketing. So if you just connect with people there, provide some value in the form of answering questions, that's the way to get clients. In-person events, so going to co-working spaces, going to events, marketing conferences as well. And obviously, once you're at a higher level, then you can start running paid ads to get clients and so on. So there's a bunch of different ways to do it. When you're starting out, it's just going to be a lot of elbow grease and effort. And it's just a pro tip when you're starting out, just try to get your first case study. Just try to, you don't necessarily need to be really good. You just need to get somebody some results. And basically, if you can get some of your friends to also do some free work for your friends and have them give you a good Upwork review, that can also work.
Yeah. Once say you're going in with like lower rates, right, to try to get those first few clients, then what type of like revenue model would you recommend to people? Is it like a revenue sharing, or is it like a fee for just per video, or how does that work?
So with YouTube ads, the way we charge at our agency is usually a minimum retainer and then a percentage of ad spend if they go over the ad spend that's included in the minimum retainer. So essentially, that's a model, that's an ad agency model that's been used for a long time, and it works. There are other models as well. So you can have tier-based pricing. You can just have fixed-rate pricing with maybe a percentage based on revenue. So you can have a hybrid model where you charge like a baseline revenue and then a percentage of basically profits or so on, right? So essentially, there's a lot of different pricing models. Just a simple one to start with is a monthly fee, but maybe, let's say, if they go over a certain ad spend amount, you charge them a percentage on that. That's like an easy, easy way to do it. Obviously, if you get into revenue and so on, you need ways to track that accurately. So you need a lot more trust with the client.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So say you're getting your first few clients, and then you're having some success, right? You're growing and scaling. So you mentioned, I think when we were talking before, about like the agency model, can you kind of talk about that business model and some of the pros and cons of going that route?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can start out as a freelancer, but really, if you want to kind of take things to the level where you're actually able to make some decent money while being able to have location and time freedom, an agency model can definitely work. But just because as a freelancer, you kind of get stuck, it's really hard to get past maybe like $5,000 to $10,000 a month as a freelancer. The only way to get past that is to actually build an agency. And then you're also able to achieve a lot more freedom. So once you have a team that helps you out, then you're able to actually kind of be able to take some time off, not be on client calls all day, and you're able to just live a much more chill lifestyle. As opposed to when you're starting out, when you're on 8 hours of calls every day, you're doing the sales calls, you're doing the client calls, you're doing everything, right? And, you know, that's needed and that's necessary to an extent. But after a certain point, I think the great thing about an agency model is you really don't need anything other than hard work and just persistence to get started. And then once you have that and you're able to scale the agency up, then you're able to go into other business models that can often be more scalable, right? So you can start doing your own trainings, you can create your own e-commerce store, but essentially you have this cash flow machine that can basically just allow you to use that money for other projects.
How about finding, like, you know, team members, people to be a part of the agency? Same thing, like Upwork or just kind of networking events? Like, where did you find some of the people on your team?
So Upwork for sure is the place to get started with hiring freelancers and help. I often, what we do is I use a tool called Workable, and it's basically an organization system for hiring people, but also they'll post in like 8 free job sites. So they'll post on Indeed, they'll post on all these job sites. So it automatically just, you know, sends it out, and you get a lot of candidates from that. Other options include Facebook groups, so Nomad Facebook groups, City Facebook groups, expat groups, etc. You can definitely get people from there. Your network, so asking your team who they recommend. Usually people will know other people who are solid. Again, networking events, co-workings, but the more scalable or more consistent forms are definitely Upwork and other freelance websites, using job sites like Workable and basically posting through those, or using Facebook ads as well. So I've had good success with using ads to hire people. So basically creating a video ad and telling people, hey, this is what we're looking for. And basically people will apply to that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. Taking that skill set and turn around and helping, using it to help you find people to join the team. Very nice.
Yeah, I've used paid ads for so many random things that it's ridiculous.
Can you kind of talk about like the basic kind of script or overview that you would use for like a video ad?
So yeah, for hiring or just for a YouTube video ad in general?
Yeah, just for an ad in general. Like, how about the fitness company that you were working with when you first started?
Got it. So in that case, he shot his own ad, but the structure I would use in terms of like how I recommend people do it is a very strong hook. So a hook is basically some sort of either action or statement that gets attention right from the get-go, right? So for example, if I start shooting an ad and let's say I want to hire a surf instructor in South Africa, right? And I don't want to go to the surf schools because they're overpriced. I want to find somebody who's like a really good surfer, maybe an ex-pro who's going to teach me one-on-one. So I would open my ad with something like, hey, are you an amazing surfer that is looking to make some extra cash, right? So immediately you got their attention, right? If they're a really good surfer, if they're like top 1%, they're going to listen to that and be like, well, what? That's me. So that's an example of a hook, right? Now, a hook could also be an action or it could be a scene. So for example, for KinoBody, the ad that he used, that he made, Greg basically had a pan-in of his mansion, right? So it was like a pan-in of his mansion, like zooming in. So immediately you're like, whoa, that looks interesting. And so you kind of wanted to keep watching it. So it could be a scene like that. It could be an action. So one of our clients, Indestructible Shoes, what we did for them is they basically have shoes that are indestructible, and you can drop hammers on them and so on. So literally the opening scene was in the first 5 or 10 seconds, there would be a hammer dropping on this guy while he's wearing the shoe, and it just bounces off his shoe. And it's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So really a hook is something that grabs their attention. After that, you basically can get into a few different things, one of them being authority and credibility. So you can, if for example, you're selling a course or so on, you can say, hey, I'm Shash Singh, and I've helped generate over $30 million with YouTube advertising, right? So it's immediately, oh, okay, this guy knows his stuff. And then, you know, that could even be like, oh, I've worked with clients like XYZ, or I've done whatever it is. And so that builds some authority and credibility. And then obviously you want to actually go into what you're, you know, going to give them, right? So if you're running an ad for, let's say you have a webinar on how to run YouTube ads, then in that, basically, you would tell them, hey, I'm hosting a free webinar that will show you all the exact tricks and tips that we've learned from, you know, running $9 million in YouTube ad spend. And then you'll get them to click over. You tell them, hey, click the link above or below to sign up for this free webinar. After that, I would go into the exact things they would learn in the webinar. So the first call to action is kind of early. It's to get people who are already interested to get their click and get them to sign up. Then after that, you're going to give people who need a bit more convincing a lot more meat and a lot more information, right? So you're going to tell them, yep, in this webinar, you're going to learn our top secret targeting method for targeting your competitors' traffic, et cetera, et cetera. you'll also want to have some social proof in there somewhere. So you'll want to probably after that section, I would say, hey, it's not just me. These are a few of my students that have gotten amazing results, and maybe show like a sliding wall of testimonials of like the results that these students have gotten. And then you would have another call to action. And at that point, you can kind of close the ad out.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, I think I heard you on another podcast too, kind of talking about like YouTube ads. It's a little bit better, right? Because people are going to YouTube to usually for educational purpose, maybe, I mean, entertainment, but usually if it's like a product or service, a lot of it is for educational purposes, right? Like maybe they're watching a video about surfing or about, you know, fitness or working out or something. Right. So you already have people like very interested in that subject, as opposed to if they're just like randomly scrolling through Facebook or something and they see this ad.
Absolutely. That's one of the best things about YouTube is you'll get very qualified leads, and you can also target people based on their behavior at the moment. So that you could target them based on the video they're watching, et cetera.
For the targeting, right? I've heard you talk about that a little bit before, right? So even if you have a competitor that sells, you know, maybe a competing product or service, like that's,
yeah,
you can go in and just like specifically target ads like before or during those videos. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So if you have a competitor who has a YouTube channel, they have a bunch of videos on YouTube, or perhaps they're influencers making videos about their products, you can target those ads with your video ad as well. And then you can also do custom affinity audiences, which is basically if people, so basically it's Google goes out and finds people similar to whatever URL you put in, right? So you put in a URL of a competitor and Google will basically create an audience based on that. Now, the exact mechanism of how they do that is a little unclear. I'm guessing it's a lot of, you know, using the data there from Google Analytics, Google Search, et cetera. But it's obviously not the same exact people, but it's very powerful. I've seen results that are pretty mind-blowing with custom affinity audiences. And you can also do custom intent, which is essentially if somebody goes into google.com and searches how to, let's say, best beginner surfboard, and you can target that Google search on YouTube. So you can target them basically cross-network targeting, right? So they sort of did an action on google.com, and then you'll hit them with a YouTube video ad. So that's really powerful because a lot of time Google search has very high cost per clicks, while on YouTube, the cost per clicks are lower.
Interesting. Okay. And do you like, can you, you know, be successful if you don't have like that large of a like subscriber base on YouTube?
Oh, you don't need a subscriber base for YouTube ads. You could literally have like 10 subscribers on your channel. And ultimately it's all about the ad, right? Because when they see the ad, they're not seeing your number of subscribers. They're not even seeing your YouTube channel. They're just, well, they're seeing the name of the channel, but they're not really, they don't really have any indication that you have subscribers or you don't. So if your ad is really good, you just are able to get people to convert. And we've had plenty of clients who've had channels with very few subscribers, however, they've, you know, generated like millions with YouTube ads.
Wow. Okay. What is like the industry standard in terms of like ad spend versus conversion? Is there what's like that metric benchmark of like what good looks like?
Well, I mean, this depends on your niche, but typically, you know, you should like, so if you know what you're doing, you can get like a 2x ROAS, 3x ROAS. So obviously, if it's a very high ticket product, you can get a higher ROAS. The best we've seen is I think we had one client who were doing like consistently like 4 to 5x ROAS, spending a lot of money because they had a very high ticket, expensive offer, right? Then you would have some offers and products where, let's say, they're not really concerned about the front end return on ad spend, where they just want to get massive number of orders in so they can resell and remarket. So for example, for a bra company we worked with, the target was a 1.6 return on ad spend, which we were hitting consistently. And obviously that was because they're selling a much cheaper product. It was much harder to, you know, basically get that to be like, you know, 2.5 or 3x because of the price of the product. So ultimately it really depends on your business and your numbers. The key is that basically, once you understand kind of where your product fits in to the marketplace, what the price of your product is, what similar products are selling for, and the click cost in your niche, you can figure out basically what kind of return you can get. Ultimately, it all comes down to math.
Okay. Awesome. Very cool. I'm glad I got to to pick your brain about this subject. It's definitely one I'm interested in learning more about, and I'll definitely link up the your course so anyone else that's interested in learning more about this, especially as, you know, a high value skill, if someone's wanting to become a digital nomad, for sure this sounds like a really interesting and good way to go. Cool. All right, let's shift gears a little bit here, man. Let's talk about the digital nomad lifestyle. So you mentioned you're from Toronto, right? And you're not a fan of the winters. What are some of the other just things that you love about kind of the lifestyle in general?
Yeah, so I travel with a group of friends. So that's the thing I like, is the brotherhood and basically the fact that, you know, we travel to different countries together. And that really allows us to, you know, explore countries together. And yeah, I think doing it solo would still be fun, but it wouldn't be anywhere as satisfying, where, you know, it kind of feels like I'm traveling with a family in a way. The other thing I do love is I like learning languages. So I've been able to learn a few different languages. I like exploring different cultures. Kind of, I like the psychology of seeing how different cultures work and how people are in different cultures. In terms of other aspects I like about it, I definitely love kind of learning new sports like surfing. So surfing's been a big passion of mine over the last year. Yeah, it's just a lot of different things, a lot of fun things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so many benefits. I love that you mentioned, you know, your friends and kind of the community aspect of it. I think that's a huge piece of it. Just people, I think, in general, you know, wanting to live the digital nomad lifestyle, you know, want to, I would say, design their lives more or better maybe than the average person, right? They care about freedom and kind of following their passion. So I think overall, it's definitely a pretty cool, like, community, and you can really meet some interesting people. Are all of your friends like working online in the same space, or are they in other industries? What's the case there?
So yeah, I mean, they all do different things. I got a couple of friends that are running Amazon product businesses. I got a buddy who's doing an email marketing agency. Another one who's doing a big B2B software agency. And yeah, one friend who's basically does a consulting offer for doing like appointment setting and so on. So he's in the whole sales niche. And another friend I have a friend who sells CBD online with Google Ads. He has some workarounds for that. It's pretty cool. yeah. You know, we may have a little bit sketchy here and there, but yeah, we got a good crew here.
Awesome. That's cool. You guys try to stick together like pretty much all the time?
We'll sometimes go off. Sometimes the group will splinter into like different places. So, you know, sometimes people will want to go to Thailand for a bit. And then me and my buddy Ryan will want to go to Brazil. But right now we all met up in Florianopolis in Brazil. And because that was just a place that I first went there and I just found it to be amazing. So I kind of slowly got everybody just started coming in there, and we just all were living there. And then right now we're in Mexico City, where we kind of had to get out of, we wanted to go to Europe, but you can't go from Brazil to Europe directly. So we decided to stay in Mexico City for like a month to just be able to, you know, get the vaccine, be able to travel to Europe without issues. And yeah, and then we're going to Poland for 3 months, and then South Africa for 3 to 6 months, depending on the, obviously how things work out there. But I'm really excited about South Africa. That's a place I'm just thinking will be awesome.
Very nice, man. Yeah, I'm very jealous hearing your upcoming travel plans. Why Poland? I mean, I've heard good things, but what drew you to there?
So, I mean, it was a group decision. For me personally, I think Amsterdam or Barcelona would be more interesting, but we wanted somewhere that would be not too expensive, which would be very central, allow us to travel all over Europe and basically be a good home base to stay during the summer. While, you know, if we had stayed in Amsterdam, I think definitely the cost would have made it a little bit more difficult to just travel around to different spots. And yeah, basically, I think we were all in agreement that Eastern Europe would be a cool spot to check out. One of my friends, he's from Belarus, so he's just really wants to get back to his roots of Poland. And yeah, the other guys as well, they're pretty excited about it. Everybody's heard really good things about Poland, and I'm pretty excited. I've heard good things as well.
Absolutely, very cool. How about like finding accommodations and stuff? Do you all usually try to stay together in just like a big Airbnb, or what do you usually do there?
I think with the number of people we have right now, it's basically very difficult to find like a 6-bedroom. I think we have like 7 or 8 people coming. So especially in some cities, you can do that. But right now, it's typically like a couple of different places. In Poland, it's going to be like 3 different places to 4 different places, just because it's been really hard to find apartments there. But once we get there, I have a place booked for a month. Once I get there on the ground, if I decide I may move to a different neighborhood, different area, typically find that, you know, if unless a place is mind-blowing, it just makes sense to commit for a month and then play it by year. If a place is really good, I'll commit to 3 months just to get a better deal.
Yeah, for sure. Be able to negotiate with a host and stuff a little bit, try to save some money there. What about like getting, you know, from a productivity standpoint, what are some of those things like as you travel to a new city and you're getting set up, like what are a few things that you do like right away to make sure you kind of, you know, don't miss a beat there?
The holy trifecta of house, co-working, and gym. You need those three in as close of a radius as possible. So the first week is figuring that out. So I used to have a personal assistant. Unfortunately, she moved on to another role recently. So I'm doing this on my own. I'm currently unassisted, as my friends like to say. So it's funny. My friend Ryan got a personal assistant back in Sao Paulo. And then I was like, man, I want one too. Like it's a really big help when you have somebody helping you out with that kind of stuff, because, you know, you just get a spreadsheet of all your options. You're like, yeah, I want that. I want that. And then, yeah, from there, I think we got like 2 of our other friends came down to Florida, but they also got assistance. So at a point, it was ridiculous. It was like 4 assistants, like just planning stuff. Like, I think we had a friend's birthday party where, it was so ridiculously complicated that without like their help, it would have been impossible, because it was like literally like us going through various challenges, kidnapping him with tasers, like literally tasing him in front of his mom, and then taking him to this part of Floripa that has sand dunes where there were like different challenges that he had to go through, including wrestling my friend who's like, it's a long story, but essentially personal assistants make life a lot more fun and interesting. So highly recommend it if you're an entrepreneur, you're starting to do well. You can get a great personal assistant for like less than $1,000 in many parts of the world. And that just allows you to increase your productivity significantly and just ensure that, you know, your life flows a lot smoother.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, man. Same thing, like Upwork, is that a good, or is there another resource that you found for finding good personal assistants?
Upwork could be an option, but I like to run ads for it. And I typically, if I know I'm going to be living in a place for a while, I'll hire somebody there for that period. And I think that's like the ultimate when you have somebody there to help you out, because then, you know, it goes to a whole new level of convenience and basically a time saving, right? Like you literally like, hey, I need this supplement. Can you get it to me? Perfect. Hey, I need socks. Can you get me some socks? So it's really convenient, because me personally, like when I was living in Brazil in Florianópolis, I was just such a surf bum that I would like, and the nearest mall was like 25 minutes away. So I literally did not go to the mall for like 8 months because I couldn't be bothered. So I was running out of socks and all my socks were torn up, and I needed them. And that's where my personal assistant just helped out massively in terms of getting new socks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I like what you mentioned before, though, about the like the holy trifecta, right? Of like house, co-working space, and gym. I would say that that's like my holy trifecta as well. I never had a personal assistant. I'm gonna have to look into that, but I would do like a lot of research, just like on Google Maps, to see, okay, this neighborhood, is there, you know, a good gym with, you know, high reviews. Same thing for a co-working space and like decently priced Airbnbs with good reviews, like all in a, you know, maybe 10, 15 minute, you know, walking radius of each other. And that just like sets you up so well for success. I would try to take it like a day or two off as well when I first, that might not be feasible for everyone depending on, you know, their work situation and their schedule. But that helped me so much, just really kind of get the basics down, like unpack, go to the gym for the first time, get some food and just kind of walk around and explore and get acclimated with the area. And then I felt like, okay, I know I have the basics taken care of. Now I can just like jump right in and be productive.
Absolutely. The first couple of days in a new city, you're just going to be unproductive. So don't expect that. Just go there and try to get yourself situated, kind of explore the area a bit, get comfortable, figure out your co-working, your gym. And yeah, that's really key.
For sure. I wanted to ask you about Medellin, Colombia. So I did a remote year program. I traveled through, I did 4 months through Latin America, and Medellin was definitely like my favorite place on that program. Just, I don't know, the weather there, the food, like, I don't know. Just felt like it was good vibes all around. What are some of those like things that you love about Medellin?
Yeah, Medellin is a great place for a digital nomad to start out. I think, and I explained, by the way, there's a video I made on my YouTube channel about the top digital nomad destinations with my buddy Ryan. I highly recommend it if you guys want to hear more about my favorite spots. That's a really good kind of explanation. So Medellin, low cost of living, you can live really well at great value. Climate is pretty good, good weather, great vibes all around. And yeah, it's a nice place to grind, right? Like I was very productive in Medellin because you'd have your co-working, you can easily get a chef for a pretty low price. Food was cheap. So yeah, and then the apartment. So I was living in this apartment for a while called Nueva Alejandría, where they had basically a sauna and a rooftop pool. So I just do the sauna, rooftop pool, go to bed, productive. Like it's just great setup for being on grind mode, right? Like we spent like a year and a half there, and that year and a half, we had a lot of fun, but we also grew our businesses massively. Like I came into Medellin, can make a few grand a month. When I left, we were doing like 30, 40 grand a month consistently in just a year and a half, right? So just being in that one spot with a good setup and being able to focus while also still have fun, right? Like it gives you enough fun where you're able to, get back into the office and really have a good time, but not necessarily feel like some place I feel like you're in the office and the vibes after you get out of the office, the vibes are a little depressing. So you never really get to decompress. So I found that was really, really great as an environment. Now, me as an older person, I think I wouldn't live in Medellin again. I think it's really good as a starter digital nomad, like when you're starting out. But I think once you've lived there for like 6 months to a year, you've probably get your fill of experience. Like I still love to visit and like go back there for a month or so. But there's certain things about the culture there and the people there where I just feel like it's not as sophisticated as I'd like. It's not like a city like Mexico City or, where people are like really entrepreneurial, really on top of their stuff. While in Medellin, it's usually the expats that are entrepreneurial, while all the smart people in Medellin move to Bogota, right? So it's kind of unfortunate. Like if you're really smart in Medellin, you don't stay there. You go to Bogota, which is the capital, where you get better jobs. So I just felt like in Medellin, it was hard to connect with like really smart local people, which kind of, for me, is a priority for sure.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, interesting. Yeah, definitely. You mentioned the cost of living. Like, it's definitely not the cheapest digital nomad destination out there, but it's like it's pretty affordable. Like, even just like the listed price on Airbnb, you can get an apartment with a rooftop pool for like $800 for the month, and I'm sure you could negotiate that down like from there. So yeah, definitely that. I only spent a month there. So I guess I'll have to go back and check it out, see how the vibes are the second time around. But yeah, I think that makes sense what you were saying in terms of like the local, entrepreneurship scene and stuff there.
I mean, it's there. It's just nowhere near as good as other people or other places I've been. So it's a place I think you would probably love it for a year. The key is to avoid getting stuck there, because I know a lot of guys that stayed in Medellin, and I just feel kind of like, come on guys, there's so many really cool spots out here. Like, and I feel like as you progress in your digital nomad career, what you're looking for changes with time. So if you commit to a place really early, it's a big risk, right? Like, because usually what you're doing at like, when I went there, I was 24 years old. Now I'm like 27. Actually, I was 23. Now I'm 27, right? So what I'm looking for in a place, what my hobbies are, what I want out of life is completely different. And that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't gone to different places, because they kind of forced me to, you know, just explore new parts of my personality and new parts of kind of what I like to do. So a city like Florianópolis allowed me to really develop kind of my athletic, like surfing side of things. My kind of basically just was completely different than what I was doing in Medellin, right?
Yeah, interesting. I think that's a really, really good point. I think that's the constant like struggle as a digital nomad. Like you find a place that you love and it's always like, shoot, do I want to stay here longer or should I keep exploring and see what else is out there? But I think you bring up some really good points that especially as a newer digital nomad, like it's worth it to take that time to explore because there could be a place that's just different or just feels like, you know, a better vibe for you at the current, you know, stage that you're at in your life. And in like you said, you know, over the years or, you know, just what's going on with you personally or, you know, how you're doing in your business and stuff, those kind of desires and stuff might change.
Absolutely. My recommendation is if you really like a spot, stay there for a year, but after that, like go try somewhere else. I think staying in a place for a year, if you really like it, doing side trips from there, it's a great way to, you know, have productivity while exploring the place and really getting to a good flow. But as I've said, like I've seen too many guys just go to one spot and be like, yep, this is the spot. And that's the first spot they go to. Like so many people I know move to Medellin. It's like the first spot they've been to and they're like, ah, okay, this is the spot. This is it. And yeah, it's after traveling to a bunch of different places, I can definitely say I'm very glad I kind of kept exploring because it's allowed me to develop into a much more well-rounded person and also really learn what I like out of life.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. Sasha, as we're wrapping up here, I wanted to ask you, what does like a typical day look like for you?
Got it. So this will depend on the place. In Brazil, in Floripa, it was typically wake up at 6:30, go surfing, take a shower, go to the office, work from, you know, let's say like 10 to like 7 or 10 to 6. After that, go home, grab dinner, hang out with my friends for a bit, maybe play some Settlers, maybe, I don't know, look into crypto and watch some crypto videos. pretty simple. Day-to-day life is pretty boring. Over here in Mexico City, it's been a lot of eating at a lot of restaurants. And generally being over here, I've definitely been a lot less healthier because, you know, there are amazing restaurants, amazing cocktails and so on. But it's pretty cool here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I ate so many tacos when I was in Mexico City, but they were all delicious. I loved it.
They were all worth it.
It was worth it for sure. So you normally are still putting in like 8 to 9 hours a day of work on a typical day?
Well, not every day, you know, like some days. Yeah. I mean, it depends. Like I'll get into grind modes where I'll work like 8-9 hours a day for months on end. And then like this month in Mexico City, it's more of a travel exploratory month. So I definitely haven't been putting in 8 hours a day here, but I've been consistently going to the office and just making sure I get stuff done that I need to. But yeah, usually like in Poland, going to Poland, I am probably going to be into, you know, 10 hours a day at the office for like 5 days a week, just because of the fact that I want to basically scale up my training program. And really, that means a lot of shooting ads, a lot of shooting different videos and VSLs and webinars and different funnels. So I just know that this summer I'm going to be in grind mode because I really want to get that set up. And then I think during when I go to South Africa, it will probably be a balance of maybe working 6 to 7 hours a day and surfing a lot more. So surfing every day, working 6 to 7 hours a day. But I want to set myself up for like being able to go to South Africa and surf really guilt-free, you know, and just be able to have a lot of fun there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think, you know, living the digital nomad lifestyle and in having your own business, right, you can kind of have that freedom to maybe like, you know, really grind it out some months, but then, you know, mm-hmm. be able to ease up a little bit on the work aspect to enjoy just kind of the lifestyle benefits.
Yeah, I prefer going like very, very hard for a few months rather than like constantly being like kind of productive. I'd rather be like, you know, like this month, I honestly haven't been very productive, but I would rather prefer like, okay, this month was like a chill month, you know, a lot of exploration, a lot of just sitting around the office cracking jokes with my friends and basically being unproductive together versus, you know, just I'd do that and then go to Poland. And I know in Poland, my game plan is to just work hard. The time zone's perfect for that because nobody can reach me till like, you know, like the late afternoon. So I basically the first 4 or 5 hours of the day, it's just deep work time where I can go shoot videos. I can script, you know, kind of new VSLs. I can do all this stuff that's kind of like really mentally focusing and mentally tiring. While then in the evening, I'll do all my meetings. So while over here, I have to usually start the day off at the meeting. And it's just like after meeting, I feel like it takes me a while to get my head together.
Yeah, I do feel like if most of the like clients and people you're working with are US hours, being in Europe, that's probably perfect. You can just have that deep work and really focus and get some stuff done without a lot of distractions and then kind of get into the calls and some of the other stuff during the day. I think that makes a lot of sense. What from like a habits standpoint, what are some of those things that you try to do really consistently that really help you focus and be productive, especially during those kind of like really grind periods?
I think definitely cold showers in the morning is a good way to get started. Just wakes you up and it's kind of doing the hardest thing first. Second thing is actually, well, this will be on a podcast, so you won't be able to see it, but this is a phone box, basically. And you can lock your phone in here. And that's really useful when you want to get some work done. Just throw your phone in there for like 6 or 7 hours. And yeah, you literally have nothing else to do except just work on your computer because your phone's locked away. So that's a little secret tip. Other than that, meditation, like, so I stopped doing meditation because in Florianopolis, I was surfing. So I felt like that kind of hit the same, you know, present feeling really good kind of vibe. But even over here, like whenever I feel a little disorganized mentally, I'll meditate. It's not something I do consistently every day. I should get back into it or doing Wim Hof. I used to do Wim Hof every day, like Wim Hof breathing, which is kind of like, it's basically a breathing exercise that gets you really present. I highly recommend you Google it or YouTube it. And that basically would fill in for the meditation. So I'm probably going to start doing one of Wim Hof or meditation when I get to Poland, because I do think that, yeah, I gotta set up a good routine for there. And that's weird because like usually, you know, it's every place you go to, you're going to have a different routine. If I'm in a surfing city, then I don't have time for that. And then surfing just keeps me like really healthy and really present. So I don't really need to meditate because I come out of the water like 3 hours without any cell phones. And if I'm not completely present in the water, I'll get smashed over by some waves. So
yeah. For sure. Yeah, I was looking up Wim Hof the other day. I need to test that out. I've heard that on a few different podcasts and people recommend it.
It's really good. It's better than meditation.
Nice. Okay. All right. I'll take your word for it, man. I got to check it out. Sash, this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate you being on the show. If people want to connect with you, they want to learn more about you and your story, your courses, your agency, where are some of the best places to find you at online?
So I have a YouTube channel. If you just look up Sash Singh, S-H-A-S-H-S-I-N-G-H. So I'll send you the link for that as well. The website for the agency is linksdigitalagency.com. I'll send you a link for that. And then for the training program, I'll have the link for that as well. So yeah, guys, this was a pleasure. Hopefully I inspired some of you to do the digital nomad thing because it's a lot of fun. I feel like I've probably had a more fun life than most people ever have in like 60 years. So it's I feel really lucky to kind of have this kind of lifestyle. It's so much fun.
100%, man. I agree with that. And yeah, I think that's a perfect way to end the episode. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Nomad on Fire podcast. If you like the show, if you could do us a huge favor, and please subscribe on whatever platform that you're using to listen to this. If you could also leave a 5-star review, that would really help us out and allow the show to be available to more people. See you next time on the Nomad on Fire podcast.